and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be in this time zone that you're in. We are welcoming you back to Dark Matter Radio with your host, Ronnie McLean. There has been so many things that have been going on over this past week. It's just been crazy, and we need to get caught up. One, I'd like to go back and just revisit a story that I was talking about last week, which was Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam and their Church of Scientology connection. Interesting. There's a lot of different posts and everything like that. It happened about maybe the year 2013, and still seems as though that people are saying that Farrakhan has sold out the Nation of Islam to the Church of Scientology for about $2 to $3 million. Hard to believe, but a cornerstone in what we would call our so quote unquote African American black society seems to have dried up with the times. So that also being said, we are following the stories of the European nation. Everybody heard that Britain had a big giant vote this week, and it was going back and forth, and you know, sportscasters and also Vegas got into it. Are they going to succeed from the union? Are they not going to succeed from the union? And most people had it that they were not going to. And lo and behold, what happened? Britain votes to go out. And one of the major reasons why they voted to go out and convinced some of their brethren was because, one, was the a lot of immigrants getting into the country. That seems to be causing a lot of disruption. Two, they are spending almost $530 million on health care for the whole entire European Union. And they had promised that that money will go back into the coffers of the British public. Lo and behold, in an interview, the congressperson or the person of their parliament kind of reneged on that promise, and he says that really shouldn't have been said. Politics in Europe, politics in Britain, same as the politics here on this side of the world. But there's another trick and another thing that happened to be going out, and that is, has Britain avoided a European superstate? Something tells me that this vote didn't come as a coincidence, and that perhaps maybe the people behind this vote knew that France and Germany drew up plans to morph the EU, European Union, countries into one giant superstate, meaning that the EU countries will morph into one giant control over all of its members' armies and its economies. France and Germany is reported to have drawn up a super state plan. It would mean members to give up armies and economic power to the EU. Reports have linked in Poland, where it has been branded not the solution. And then leaders in Germany, because Germany has the strongest economy in the European Union. And remember, France was rumored, along with five other European countries, to take votes the same as Britain to try to get out. But now it's being reported that leaders of Germany, France, and Italy said the EU is indispensable tonight, and they are forming this plan for a closer European Union. And they have branded it an attempt to create a European super state. Imagine that. And let's see how this is flowing in with world politics on this side of the continental Earth. Has anyone heard of the North American Monetary Union? Well, some people got a taste of that through NAFTA. Didn't do so well for Canada, didn't do so well for the United States, as most of our jobs, manufacturing jobs, and also businesses, started floating over to Mexico, and then they started floating over to India, and then they started floating over to China, and now they just seem to be floating wherever the cheapest labor is. But the North American Monetary Union is, well, it's not really theoretical, because it seems as though they're working on it, but it's an economic monetary union of three North American countries, Canada, the United States, and Mexico. Implementation would involve the three countries giving up their currency. Well, that sounds like a super state in Europe. With units of the dollar, our American dollar, Canadian dollar, and the Mexican peso, which is worth about maybe a coin nickel, are adopting a new currency, creating specifically for the purpose some versions of the theory, particularly those circulating in Canada, assume only the United States and Canada would be included. But theoretically, this union and the monetary currency, the new one, will be called the Amero. Don't know if anybody has heard of the Amero, but this is one of the reasons why Dark Matter is here, so that we can begin to start getting you in tune to what's going on around the world. And also to let you know that the only thing that the black society, quote-unquote black society, or the indigenous person of America, the original people of this land, have absolutely no say-so in world politics at all. Remember in 1980 when Jesse Jackson stuck his neck into the political arena, him and his dashiki and African garb and all that other type stuff, trying to get everybody thinking that they were from someplace where they weren't. But anyway, he got up there and he became almost a laughingstock. He, you know, admittedly, it seems as though he did get somebody released out of a prison camp. But that being said, that may have been the only time that somebody may have from our particular species have been involved in world politics. If you notice, all the other ones have been killed. So let's move on to this North American Monetary Union that may be mirroring the superstate of Europe. Did you realize that a newsletter and all over the news on the radio, especially CNN, Canada's Trudeau, he's the prime minister over there, hosts the Three Amigos Summit with U.S., Mexico presidents. And I believe that's happening sometime during this week. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau will host the president, Barack Obama, the Mexican president, Enrique Peña Nieto, in Canada for June of this year, this week probably. Editions for the Three Amigos Summit. The Ottawa Citizen has learned. That's a newspaper over there in Ottawa, Canada. Trudeau is expected to announce the upcoming summit, the first to be held in Canada in nearly a decade, during the official visit to Washington this week. Sources say the announcement comes from months of intense behind-the-scenes negotiations Canada and its North American partners. Do you notice that a lot of these agreements are always behind the scenes? No different from the North Atlantic Trade Agreement, the seems as though that that's also behind the scenes. In fact, here in America, when they said that we're going to be voting on that, they weren't going to release the particulars of that bill until after the vote. How much say-so do you think you really have in your politics and in your government? So this North America Atlantic treaty, or this alliance, has been rumored now for about, I would say, 15 years, going all the way back to the days of George Bush, when he had promoted and exercised his rights to bring forth that giant freeway going from Mexico all the way up through Canada. Superhighway is what it's called. Smith & Wesson gun sales are up 22%. The company, one of the nation's largest gun sellers, reported a 22% annual increase in firearm sales Thursday. Smith & Wesson's executives also projected robust sales growth in the next 10 months. Shares of Smith & Wesson's spiked nearly 7% after hours of trading after the report was released. The follows of violate those days that the gun manufacturer stocks, which initially jumped after the deadliest mass shootings in U.S. history that left 49 victims dead at an Ontario gay club. Interesting. And, you know, we get into also gun sales or surge against what population or with what population? Gays, lesbians. After the Orlando shootings, this one is we're talking about. We're into Denver now. A Denver newspaper reports gun sales are surging in the wake of Sunday's deadly mass shootings in Orlando, Florida. The tragedy is generating new debate over gun control reform and the right to bear arms. That is your Third and Fourth Amendment, which something we can get into now, but that is for another society and not for ours, really. Gun shops typically see a spike in customers after mass shootings, but this time many are seeing shoppers they rarely seen before. More gays and lesbians. George Horn, the owner of the gun room, Denver's oldest firearm dealer, said Tuesday, business is booming at his store. For this time of the year, I say, it's three or four times what it normally has been, he says. Background checks that normally take minutes now can take hours. At sales surge, similar to what has happened after Sandy Hook, interesting shooting over there as well, and the Aurora Theater shootings, remember that, with I believe it was Batman, we're not surprised by it, Horn said. However, what's the difference this time around the climate? Mike Smith, and firearms instructor of Colorado Springs, where are we in Colorado? This happened in Florida, right? Is one of the many closely tracked and sudden surges in gay lesbian buying weapons. I think right now, because of what happened, people are looking for answers, he said. You walk into gun shops and you expect to see people, frankly, who look like me. I think we forget. We're a country of all people, not just people who fit a predetermined mold. Isn't that interesting? That sounds like a real capitalist. The Pink Pistols is the National Guns Club for Gay and Lesbians. It saw a membership soar about 1,500 members since that Saturday. And since Saturday, 3,500 on Monday, the day after. Dozens of new chapters are springing up, including Smith's creation in Colorado Springs. He says it's something he feels compelled to do, even though he is heterosexual. I look at disenfranchised minorities that need someone who's willing to say, I'm the source who's there willing to help, he said. It's another chapter appears to be forming in Denver area, the Pink Pistols. Interesting. You know, that line, I look at disenfranchised minority that needs someone who's willing to say, I'm a resource who's here and willing to help. Sounds like what Aboriginals have been going through for quite some time. And when we get down to guns, we look at another thing that had happened this week. Freddie Gray, the verdict. U.S. police officers who kill rarely get punished, a news article by court says, but they might get rich. Interesting. Posted, the U.S. police officer can kill without consequences. The latest confirmation of this injustice came on June 23rd when the Baltimore police officer, Cesar Gordon Jr., 46, was found not guilty on the charges related to Nero, related to the shootings. Charges with second-degree intentional assault, two counts of misconduct in office, the reckless endangerment was one of six Baltimore officers charged in Gray's death. He's not the first officer in high-profile killings to avoid punishment since 2015 Baltimore indictments, and he's unlikely to be the last. On August 9, 2014, police officer Darren Wilson shot an unarmed black teenager, Michael Brown, to death and left his body on a Ferguson, Missouri street. Remember that. For 4.5 hours. The man was laying there for 4.5 hours. Wilson likely had no idea that his actions would set off a national controversy over race and police brutality, and that the controversy will make him a millionaire. You kill somebody of an indigenous background and you get rich. Interesting. Within 2 weeks, the GoFundMe page set up support. Wilson raised over $225,000. Despite the online protests, a second GoFundMe page was soon created, raising a total of, get this, $433,000. On November 14th, the St. Louis prosecutor Bob McCullen chose not to charge Wilson's and Brown's death. A Wilson fundraising organization revealed that the outpouring of additional donations he had raised Wilson totaled roughly $1 million. This is Wilson's fortune, for the fate of a young black man in St. Louis has not. Since 2014, St. Louis police has continued to kill unarmed black men without repercussions. That's what they call that, the Ferguson effect, kill an indigenous and get rich. That's from the courts. Newsline, and very, very interesting. And as we take a look at this, we begin to start. And the reason why I bring up a lot of this news in the beginning of the program is because I need you to understand exactly the framework upon which you are standing on as an original person of this land that has absolutely no say in your political endeavors to guard you or anyone around, you know. And I know a lot of people say, well, you know, we voted in Barack Obama, you know, he's an African-American, and he stands for all of us and this, that, and the other thing. Well, yes, he is an African-American. His mother was white. His father was from Africa, which makes him a true 100% African-American. But remember, when other people ran for president, they were indigenous Americans under a false guise or name of African-American or black. And these people, who were super highly intelligent, didn't even see the light of day in most cases when it came down to presidential debates. And that's a whole other thing that we can get into. just want to go over mapping some police violence here in the United States. Police have killed at least 102 unarmed black people since 2015. I'm going to start substituting that word black for indigenous, because this is who you are. I'm going to start substituting that corrupt and embarrassing name, African American, which means conquered people. And we went through that before, you know, in terms of that whole entire definition. Listen to the first program that we put out. And what does African-American mean? And you can understand why you never want to use that word, African-American. So I'm replacing these words with indigenous, and because this is exactly who and what you are. And after you heard the last program, you can have an understanding what your makeup of the indigenous personality of your lineage is truly about. But police has killed at least 102 unarmed black people since 2015, nearly twice each week. We see which police departments were responsible. We're not going to go deep down into it, really. We just want to look at this from a very high level. It's depressing enough just to look at this from the level that we're looking at it in. Nearly one in three indigenous people killed by police in 2015 were identified as unarmed, though the actual number was likely higher due to underreporting. 1 in 3 indigenous people. 30% of those unarmed people killed by police were indigenous in 2015, despite indigenous people being the being only 13% of the U.S. population. We're only 13% of the U.S. population, and that's going to be extremely important as we go on with some of the other things that we're going to be looking at. We also take a look at unarmed indigenous people were killed at a 5-time rate of unarmed others in this country. Right? So other nationalities, we were killed 5 times more than any other nationality in the United States in 2015. Amazing. Only 10 of 102 cases in 2015 where an unarmed black person was killed by police resulted in officers being charged. So 10 people, 10 police officers out of 102 cases, 10 were actually charged with a crime. And out of that, only 2 of these deaths, Matthew Hajadid and Eric Harris, resulted in convictions of the officers involved. Only 1 of 2 officers convicted of their involvement in Matthew Hajadid's death received jail time. He was sentenced to 1 year in jail and allowed to serve the time exclusively on weekends. That's pretty interesting. So when we begin to start mapping these murders of indigenous people, it only goes to tell you that, you know, there's more of this subject matter that we're going to have to cover. And it's going to be quite disturbing when we do get to it. And that is going to be the slaughtering and the purposeful annihilation of a civilization and how people got gunned down, how people got shot, women, children, and babies, no different from how they're killing us today. although I'm here in Canada, I have my son here in Canada. He's now 19. He's getting ready to turn 20. He really doesn't want to come back to the United States, the land upon which he was born, because he's scared that he is going to get shot to death walking around New York City. And I can understand the feeling, because people over there in Chicago, people over there in Michigan, people over there down there in Florida, Baltimore, people in New York City get choked to death, you know, and people over there in Texas. I mean, all over this country, I mean, people are getting slaughtered and killed to death. And it's in the same vein as how our forefathers were being killed off this land by the hundreds of thousands going into 100 million people slaughtered, not by disease, you know. And that's another thing I have to really get into, because when I began to start studying all of this, my first inclination was to go by what the history books was teaching me, what I was learning in history class and what I was learning in college, and that when the Europeans first arrived over here on this land, most of the people were already killed off by mistake because they brought diseases over here. And so they killed off almost 100 million people by the diseases alone, so when they came back over here, there was nobody here. But as I began to start reading, a lot of that information was contradictory. And when they actually did come over here, as we did promenade over the last couple of shows, you can see where a lot of the people actually come from. And 90%, if not 99%, of the people that came into this country were already here, and being gunned down and slaughtered. Some of the names of the people that were slaughtered was Ken Childress. He was killed in 12/31/15. Beatrice Jones, 12/25/15. Kevin Matthews, he was killed in 12/23/15. Leroy Browning, he was killed in 12/20/15. A lot of people was killed in December. That's interesting. Roy Nelson, 12/19/15. Miguel Espana, 12-8-15. Nathaniel Pickett, that's a 11-19-15. And the list goes on and on. Tamara Thomas, 11-18-15. What did she do? A Harmon police officer killed Tamara, who was the mother of three children. And the motive is suspect to be financial. Officer Calvin Campbell was charged with the murder for killing. It's just unbelievable how many women and how young the people were when they were killed. And that's a whole nother story that we're going to be getting into. It's a story about us as a people. We know more about the Western civilization of Europe, Africa, Egypt, the Middle East, China, even India, and the Aboriginals of Australia than we know anything prior to the Europeans, albinos as they call them, coming here into our hemisphere that we were in control of for thousands of years. So with that being said, those are the things that I needed to get us caught up on. The other thing I want to get us caught up on is there are certain things that are going around in a lot of different communities, and I want to be able to promote them on Dark Matter Radio because it's important for us to be able to support our communities as we begin to start rising our consciousness as to who and what we truly are as a people. Not as African Americans, not as so-called Black people, but it's a term that's hard to get rid of. But as indigenous people, natural to this land, one of them is King Haram Lodge in Jamaica, Queens, New York. They're having what they call an Operation School Supply, and they are doing fundraisers and trying to get up at least I think 900 packets of school supplies to be able to give out to a couple of different schools down there in New York. And as we know, times right now, down in the States with the depressing economy and wages and our unemployment rate, which always seems to be three times as high as anybody else's rate in America, need as much help as we can get. So anybody having anything out there to do or to deal with supporting our indigenous community, I would deeply, deeply appreciate that. You send it over to Black Talk Radio, and we will get that on there for you and make sure that everybody knows about it in your particular community. So that being also said, make sure that you do support Black Talk Radio and all of its subsidiary programming, because there's a lot of good programming on there to keep you informed as to what's really happening and what's really going out there in the community. So let's make sure that we do that and support ourselves and support us as much as we can. So that being said, let us get into what we've been talking about last week. And after this short break, we're going to get into what we talked about last week.
Wanna take
and make sure that we have an understanding where we're from.
You're listening to Dark Matter Radio with your host, Ronnie McLean, on Black Talk Radio. To reach Dark Matter and to talk to Ronnie, log on to Black Talk Radio. Look up Dark Matter, click on the icon. You can reach Ronnie through Skype or through the telephone number that is provided. Dark Matter Radio. Ronnie McLean. as he walked this land of broken dreams. It had been many things. But happiness is just an illusion. Loaded sadness is an illusion. What becomes of a broken heart? Who has love that's now departed? I don't know. I've got to find some kind of peace of mind. Roots of love will grow all around me. For me, they come tumbling down. Every day, heartaches grow a little stronger. I can't stand things, pain much longer. I walk in the shadows, searching for light, cold and alone. No comfort in sight. Hoping and praying for someone who cares, always moving and going nowhere. What becomes of the brokenhearted who has love that's now departed? I know I've got to find some kind of peace of mind. Help me. Help me, please. I'm searching through. I don't succeed. But someone, look, there's a growing need. All is lost. There is no place for a beginning. All that's left is an unhappy ending. Now, what becomes of a broken heart who has love that's now departed? I know I've got to find some kind of peace of mind. I'll be searching everywhere just to find someone to care. I'll be looking every day. I'm going to try to find. I know I'm going to find a way. I know I'm going to stop. And no one's going to stop me now. I'll find a way. Somehow. A song written by Jimmy Ruffin. It was sung by Jimmy Ruffin, What Becomes of a Broken Hearted. Those are the lyrics. And it was a tune that was written by William Witherspoon and Paul Reiser and James Dean. And this could be the theme song for the indigenous person of America. It has so many truths. When you begin to start listening to that, and as we were discussing the makeup of the Aboriginal being here on this side of the land, we found out that a lot of people came from Europe, which is surprisingly, and the United States has always been an enclave of people coming from Europe and coming from Spain, such as the Moors visiting. But in this case, they were being ran out because of the civil wars that were there having over there and the grip of black leadership being being ripped away from them. And that's a whole nother study in itself, the European history, what happened over a 1,000, maybe 1,500 year period of black reign, and the indigenous black people that actually lived there. We found out that a lot of black people came from Scotland, who were indigenous to the land, and they were thrown out. A lot of people came from Britain that was indigenous to the land, as well as all over Europe. And we also found that there was a lot of people who were moved out of some parts of Africa, right, and brought over here. And now we also understand that a lot of these people were mixed in with the indigenous people of the Americas. And that's one of the reasons why I say Ameridians, because we are a combination of a lot, but we are still, for the most part, and I would say, as you begin to start understanding, 90 to 95%, most part, all of us, indigenous to this part of the land. We also went over the Yuchi Indians and what happened to them, which was typical to the majority of the so-called black Native Americans. If you looked at a Yuchi Indian, you'll see that they are extremely dark skin, curly hair, like most people. We also went through the types of hair that different types of black people have. There was curly, straight, from different parts of the world that were mixed in, and remembering that the Yuchi, they went back to I believe it was Florida. And they started forming what is now known as the Seminole tribe. And then we also got into the alliance that the Europeans made
with the indigenous black people that they were kicking out, and said that if they went to war against the Americans to try to subdue them, that they would be promised freedom. So a lot of them went to Philadelphia and they were fought. And after the war here in the Americas, the Revolutionary War, as they call it, a lot of the blacks stayed free and were allowed to return into Britain's hands, and a lot of them went up to Quebec. So after having established where the black people are from the United States and where they have come from, let's look a little further to calculate the percentage of the modern blacks, I'll say blacks at this point, for lack of a better word. Some of this information that I'm going to be getting you is coming from realhistory.com. All right, so I always want to be able for you to be able to follow some of the links and to be able to study as much as possible, so then that way you can recheck some of the sources that I'm using, which are various, and I try to, as I'm going along, detail that out. And so we wish to calculate the percentage of the modern blacks in the United States the citizens of Africa represent, since they are now known as African Americans, quote unquote, which are really indigenous Americans, natural Americans, people who have been on this side of the continent for more than 50,000 years. But try as we might, we cannot find accurate data by which to make our calculations. So rather than jumping through hoops, let's just use the numbers that we know for sure. That Emory database, remember that Emory from that Emory College, we talked about that, calculated the African American's percentage of the 1870 census population. We assume that moving forward 4 years would not appreciably affect our results. So we know that by 1866, 965,977 African slaves have landed in North America. It has been logically determined that because of their poor treatment and health, slave populations could not appreciably increase. Now, that's a whole nother thing to wrap your head around when you start talking about the slave trade. You have to remember that wasn't peaches and cream. This was no roots, guys, ladies and gentlemen. This wasn't no roots, right? They weren't being served tea and getting whipped every other day, and you know, and being talked to. Though these people were, there was no room for any kind of leisureality whatsoever. It was hard and a tremendous burden of life on these people. And we know that just 4 years later, from that 66,000 population in 1870, the black population of the United States is 4,880,000 people. Well, there's 9 people in there as well. So when we begin to start breaking it down, right, and we divide the numbers, 366,000 into 880 million, it breaks down to around 7.5% of the population at that particular time was African. Now, you have to understand what I'm talking about is that these people who came in, these are the people who actually landed. We're not talking about the people who actually survived, right? Because even though maybe 365 people landed, only a portion of that survived. We'll get into that now. Several law enforcing national origin quotes on American immigrations were enacted in 1921 and 1924, where in effect until they were repealed in 1965, while these laws were aimed at restricting the immigrations of Jews and Catholics from Central and Eastern Europe and immigration from Asia, they also impacted African immigrants. This legislation effectively excluded Africans from entering the country. from the Immigration and Nationality Act of 1965 to 2007. 1965 to 2007. Now, think about that, all right? It was difficult for any kind of African to get into this country from 1965 to 2007. So an estimated total of 0.8 to 0.9 million Africans migrated to the United States, according roughly, accounting for roughly 3.3% of the total immigration to the United States during this period. Since the African immigration was not allowed into modern times, 1965, but the black migration into the United States from the Caribbean and Latin America kept increasing. Now, understand that. The black Caribbean and Latin American, America, these people were already there. So they were just being transported from these islands and from these other areas into America. All right? And you have to understand that these people were indigenous to the land. When this ban was lifted, right? But even then, the 7.5 percentage would still only get smaller over time, even after 1965, because migration to the United States from the Caribbean and Latin America always increased, regardless of the law. This means that only 1 out of 13.3 black, quote-unquote, black Americans was an African in 1870. Well, I'll say that again. This means that only 1 out of 13.3 black Americans, indigenous Americans, was an African in 1870. There's no telling what the number is today, but it would likely be considerably smaller due to the continual immigration of Native Americans from Latin Americans. And if less than out of every 13.3 modern black Americans in the United States are from African extraction, then where did the myth of the black African Americans come from? And why don't the blacks in the United States know their true history today? So there's a lot of questions during the show that we're going to be taking into consideration. And it's extremely important for us to understand this, because we are facing, as a people, extinction. Extinction. Because today, and we're getting into a whole other subject, but we're going to get back to what our makeup is again, but I need you to really understand why these subjects are so important, because every time that you hear something, you say that we have to save it for the next generation, we have to get it to the next generation. What I'm telling you people now, what I'm telling us now, what I'm telling the indigenous Americans now, is that the movement that has to take place in order for us to be able to save our communities, our children, ourselves, our lives, from Freddie Gray to anything that deals with anything that can rid an indigenous American off of this earth, must happen now, because there isn't much time left. And that's the reason why I go over the BritX. Now, the Britons, they knew something weird was going to happen, or they knew what was going to happen, so they voted for their sovereignty of independence so that they can have a say in this world. We need to be able to have a say in this world as well. And this is where we're moving. And we're moving in our own earth, on our own land, to a place as to where we can protect our own. And protect those that are under our protection as well. Because remember what I said about the Kootenays, the Kootenay Indians who have laid it out so well, that God has gave us this land to till and to procure and to protect all things that are on it. And as long as we do that, the land will produce for us and the land will be good to us. And he will protect us. And as soon as we stopped doing that, we became lost people. So somewhere along the line in our history, we became lost people. So firstly, Many blacks in North America and U.S. and the Caribbean do have a linking to their true history. There are tales that are passed down through generations of their races. And how many times has anybody in your family has told you, well, you're Cherokee? You know, you're Seminole. And if you're Seminole, that means you must be part of the Uchi tribe. And, you know, or you're Apache. Or many other different designations of these nations that created the civilization that was here in this North, Middle, South Atlantic region, all the way from Alaska, the North Poles, the Northern Territories, all the way down through South America, Peru, and the Arctic. And so how many times have you been told this? Right? By annotations in family Bibles, these were the courses of free blacks. The slave families were rarely a family at all. It consisted of a woman whose spouse was often absent for reasons beyond control. He was sold or rented out, or he was dead. The slave woman raised the children only to help another slave woman in the same situation. So the women were basically really left alone as they were just ravaging through the men and making sure that they absolutely had nothing to do with their children. And can you see remnants of that today in our indigenous communities? The Mungo and the Melanin community alike. Keep them separated, keep them distorted. They don't know who they are, they don't know where they're coming from, and you can't raise your children in the way that you want to raise them because they're being raised in a system that is not geared for their well-being. Then after she has raised her children to adulthood or thereabouts, they're routinely sold. Families are broken up. How many of our children are now in foster care? Or our dads, or our brothers, or our cousins in jail, taken out of the society. A lot of people say, well, you know, they deserve to be there because they committed the crime. But remember back in 1965, there were rarely any indigenous people in jail. It wasn't until after they committed on this war on drugs, and then all of a sudden, almost every black person was going to jail. Indigenous black person. Creating a jail society of over 2 million people, and we're almost half the population, and we're less than 14, and at that time, I'm 13% of the total population of the United States. We are in no better situation today than we were, and when they were putting us in the situation we find ourselves in today. We have no gains, really, to speak of, other than we're able to get an education from a system that doesn't tell us who and what we are. And we send our children to places as to where we can't even educate our own children. I was shocked at Oprah Winfrey. Yes, I did say I was shocked at Oprah Winfrey when she put up a program and did not include homeschooled children involved in that because she says she didn't believe in it. When somebody says that they don't believe in homeschooling, they're only telling you the only reason why they believe in education so your children can be indoctrinated into a system of lies. So then that way you can continue in not knowing who and what you are, bringing us to a system as to where we are going to be extinct as a people if we continue on doing what we're doing. So we can have our forums and we can have our educational, we can run for a political office, we can run for political office on our school boards, we can do all kinds of things that we can do in our particular neighborhoods. I must again reiterate that are on the death bodies of your forefathers, murdered, bludgeoned, shot, killed. and your cities and your towns, all up along the eastern seaboard, all up along the western seaboard, all through Kansas City, in the middle of our country, alike with the indigenous people coming from all over now, mixed in with our population. You build the towns that they built on. And at one point in United States history, we had mirrored towns. And the reason why they were mirrored towns was because we were already there. We didn't mix in with an Indian Mongol population. We were the Indian population. We were the indigenous population. And the reason why a lot of people have amnesia today, which really isn't amnesia, it's been a worse than a psychological trick, but it's been a very contrived and conceived plan to make sure they take you from the earth upon which you were sworn to protect. And this ain't about racism. This ain't about hating white people. This ain't about hating Mongol Indians. This ain't about hating Chinese people. This ain't about hating Arabs. Although, when you get down to it, Frederick Douglass did say that there was 100 million people that were swept away in slavery. Many of those 100 million were because of the Arab slave trade that came into Africa and wiped a whole bunch of their societies out. It was the Arabs that took the Africans out and put them into their societies and did the most harm in that way. That was on the other side of the world. That was their mess, and then they brought their mess over here to us. Well, you know, when I say they, the Europeans. So what are you going to do when you find now that this information, that only one in every 13.3 modern black Americans in the United States are of African extraction? And you know if you're from Africa, because if you're from Africa, you have a long-standing history. I mean, you know where you're from. And it's no secret from where you're from. It's those of us when they say, okay, well, you know, I mean, I had to go through this. I went through an all-white school for all my years of schooling up until 12th grade, I believe it was. It was in Rockwell Center School District. There's about maybe 40 blacks inside the whole school, maybe. A few Mexicans. And then I used to get this question all the time, where are you from? Well, I'm from here, and I'm from there, and I'm from this part of Europe, and I'm from that part of Europe. Anytime they ask somebody who was from not America, Africa, where are you from? They would say, well, I'm from Angola, Nigeria, Egypt, South Africa. They knew exactly where they were from. And there was a country where they tried to bring a whole bunch of black people over there too. They said, we're going to go back home. We're going to go back home. You know, you got Jesse Jackson in his African garb, and, you know, he can't even speak African language, but yet he's African. He doesn't even know an African language. But yet he's dressed up like one. You got people going over to Africa, talking about, you know, how they're African and just that and the other thing. But the thing is that, you know, people can be whatever they want to be. And I'm not going to discount them or make fun of them, because they can do whatever they want to do. They're free people. But I'm just letting us know who we are, what we are, where we're from, what we need to tolerate, what we don't need to tolerate. One thing we don't need to tolerate is all the bad language that's been going on the internet. That's not who we are originally. That where we're from. That's not our makeup. Do you know that in the history books, and we're going to get into this, who are we as a people? What did we believe in? One of the things that we actually believed in, we believed in having one wife. We believed in one God. We didn't believe in a whole bunch of profanity. In fact, none. We believed in decency out in public. and we treated our women as equals, as the women treated the men as equals. The women tilled the earth, and they produced, just as they produce babies. They are the progenitors, or the makers. They make things. As we protected them, and we protected the earth. We are so far away from the people of who we are that we have no people right now. I don't know any black farmers. There might be some black farmers out there, but I don't know any black farmers. I was in a farm just the other day down in British Columbia in Cranbrook. I was down on a farm. Few farms down there. And they're farming. They know the earth. They know the cattle. They know the horses. They know the goats. They know the pigs. They know the sheep. Well, those were things that the reason why when they started defeating us with the help of the Mongolians, who later got turned on themselves, they had to get us to run their farms, cook their food, end their meals, till their lands, because we know how to do it. We were the ones who taught them when they first came. Those are the kind of people that we are. With people of the earth. And because we got away from ourselves, of who we are, we now become congruent to a society that doesn't facilitate the melanin magic within inside of your body. And again, these are subjects that we're going to be getting into very, very, very deeply as we begin to start talking about who we are as people, because we need to learn these lessons extremely quickly, because there's a lot of things that are happening on this world, a lot of things happening on this earth. They're about to do a lot of things that you're not going to be agreeing with. But the African American produces nothing. The African American doesn't teach his own children. The African American doesn't own its own land. The African American doesn't own any industries. The African American doesn't control his own government. The African American virtually has absolutely almost no say-so in the way that he is being governed whatsoever on his own land. I want to read you something by Martin Luther King. And it's from his I Have a Dream speech. I Have a Dream speech. Made abundantly clear that the Negro, he says that the, and I quote, "The Negro finds himself in exile in his own land." And that's what he said in the I Have a Dream speech. After 100 years, we still find ourselves languishing. The Negro still finds himself languishing and trapped in his own land. Martin Luther King knew. You know who else knew? Who I'm really shocked at? Louis Farrakhan knew. His teacher told him that every time you look into a face of a Negro, you're looking into the face of an indigenous person. That's what he was taught. So, to begin this, or concluding what we've been learning here, and there's so much more to get into it, you have a good understanding now as who and what you are and what you're made up of. You also now know that you're pretty much almost 98% all indigenous American, mixed in with some African American, with some Africans, and mixed in with some Africans that came from Europe or indigenous to Europe. Hard to know, but a lot of times they say that they're indigenous, meaning that they were already there when the other people got there. So, These are difficult messages, heart-wrenching messages that are going out right now. And we need to understand that we have to be able to give ourselves some time to be able to acclimate ourselves to this information. And now that we're past these Jim Crow eras, where we weren't allowed to read, we weren't allowed to teach our children how to read, we weren't allowed to gain any kind of education. They took everything away from us, language, religion. They took our family away from us. They killed us if we began to start trying to do things out of the realm upon which they wanted us to. And even in the abolitionist area, they didn't ask the questions. And, you know, the questions as to, you know, are you, you know, African, or are you really, really indigenous? They never went to that question at all. And one of the things we're going to get into was the slave, the transatlantic slave myth, as some people may call it. And just with that, because what I'm telling you, Atlantic slave trade did not take place in the way and in the manner upon which they said. Hundreds of millions, or millions and millions, or tens of millions of Africans did not come from Africa. It came from exactly where we had depicted them and where we broke them down to be. And if people do think that, there are some questions that we need to ask ourselves in terms of how all these hundreds of millions of people actually came from Africa. You know, what kind of wood would these ships be constructed from? Because remember, they're transferring or transversing the most difficult parts of the some of the most difficult seas of the world, right? It's not the Pacific Ocean, the passive ocean, Pacifica, passive ocean. It's the Atlantic Ocean. These are harsh times. I mean, you guys have seen that movie, The Perfect Storm. I mean, that was a ship probably about the size of Columbus's ship that he brought over here originally. You know, what forests in Portugal and in Spain were used to get the lumber to construct these ships? What ports were used in ships built near? What were the names and companies responsible for building these ships? How did they recruit the men to take a trip halfway around the world, and who was responsible for advertising it if most European couldn't read? How long did it take for the wind-powered ships from Portugal and Spain to reach the Dark Continent? I mean, these are just some of the questions that we have to answer. We also found out also in the first show that we did that Columbus also knew, he knew where he was going. He knew where he was going, and the European people actually knew exactly what they wanted to do when they got here. They knew about the riches over here and the civilization that was over here, which was more stronger and powerful than what they had over there. And their corrupt, destroyed Europe, which it was corrupt and was destroyed. Most of the rivers and all the forests were all torn down and polluted. And then when you get down to, you know, there's a slave ship, and I'm gonna have to develop a website so I can put some of these pictures on there. Most of you people seen the slave ship, and that slave ship was a pinnacle for them to show how people were crammed in there by the hundreds. And that slave ship that you see all over the place, that slave ship never existed. It never existed. That slave ship was a representation of what they thought a slave ship looked like when it was crammed with the people. And who put that on? I think it was the abolitionists that actually drew up that slave ship. They never seen the slave ship. And when you begin to start thinking about the slave ships, how does a slave ship survive the continental battering that it takes from water, wind, and sun? You know, and then, you know, how do they feed all these people that were laying down, stacked on top of one another, like sardines, actually like sardines. Now, one of the things I want you to try is maybe later on today, tomorrow sometime, go lay down and start trying to drink some water. It's almost impossible. And it took almost, what, 3 months for a ship from that side of the world to get over to this side of the world at that particular time? And so when you're talking about transporting all these different people from over there, there's a lot of things that you have to take into consideration. So that being said, another great show. I'm glad you were here with us. And I want you guys to tune into next week's show, because next week we're going to be talking about your DNA. Why doesn't it show up as an Indian or as an Aboriginal? And get a little bit more clarification on that. I'd like to give out thanks right now as we end the show to our producer, Scotty, and to the people who have contributed into a lot of this information that we have. Take care, guys. I will see you guys next week. Another good show. Dark Matter. The Hoops.